Oh, yeah, I'm on the prowl.
That's right, everybody. It's another week of the Seth Crisco Radio Show here on Blog Talk Radio with Brilliant Ideas Radio. And we've never really blown your house down, but we keep on trying week after week after week. And here we are again. Beautiful, lovely, late summer, pre-fall day here in New York City. We've had off and on rain like every other day or so. So it's just been a little strange. We get beautiful, beautiful days. Then we get just a rainy, rainy, rainy day. So we had a little bit of rain yesterday or the night before, but yesterday was nice. Today's really nice and clear blue skies. I spent most of the day yesterday in the garden. That was really just a pleasure. I had such a busy weekend and a busy Monday with an event that yesterday I just hopped on my bike and rode around and hung out in the garden all day long, just picking figs and nibbling on things. It just took me back to my youth in New Mexico. I had a big garden growing up there, and I would just spend most of the daytime outside just eating fresh things that I found. So it kind of gave me that good feeling. So we usually talk about what's in season and the Gotta Feed the Kid and what's grilling and all that. So seasonal things right now, people, get out there. Get some beet greens. Peppers are happening. It's chili season in New Mexico if you happen to be in the Southwest or any of those places. But New Mexico is the place to be right now for chili. If you've never gone out there, if you've never been there, people from there know what I'm talking about. There are roadside chili roasters with a big propane tank and this big basket drum that looks like an oil drum, but it's a basket. They're on the side of the road. They're in fairs. They're at farmers markets. They're at grocery stores. The smell of chili is filling the air right now, and it's amazing, and I sure wish I was there enjoying that. So chili season in New Mexico. Those of you that have disposable income and you just want to hop on a plane right now and get right out there and get out there and do that. Make a chili addict out of you. So chili, that's what I'm going to stop at chili today in terms of what's in season. Figs are still in season. There's a lot of things out there, but let's just leave it at chili for right now because you can't really top that. We got a great show. Got an exciting guest coming up. I'm going to tell you about him in a minute. The Gotta Feed the Kid. We've been doing smoothies every morning. I don't know if you guys out there do smoothies. You can get some protein powders or not, but I make him a big blender full of banana or fresh berries or whatever it is smoothie I've got around here, and I use almond milk, and that just starts his day off just right. It's a beverage. It's, you know, if you're thirsty when you wake up, you've got that taken care of. He gets a large amount of protein and nutrients from that smoothie, and it just keeps him going all day. So smoothies, if you guys are thinking of what are you going to do for your kids out there, smoothies are always a good alternative for things. Not much is cooking in, for me lately. I'm just the normal stuff. Nothing new in my kitchen. I just had a big event. Well, not a big event, 20, 25 people, little party. And it went off without a hitch. I didn't get a chance to prep too much the day before. I was kind of busy, so I did something I don't normally do, which is saved everything for the last minute. And that certainly stressed me out, so I probably won't ever be doing that again. I like to get things done and be prepared just in case something goes wrong. You know, you need that extra time to fix things. And when you wait over to the last minute, you have not given yourself that leeway. So fortunately, nothing went wrong and I didn't have to do anything over, because that happens. Cooking is got elements involved there. You've got heat, you've got ingredients, you've got a lot of stuff. mistakes can be made. You try to minimize those mistakes. You try to figure out your timing and, you know, the science behind it all there. But you never know. You never know. And well, I've been fortunate. Hey, we've got a caller. What's going on with that? Hey, caller, who's calling in?
I'm just one of those garden people who grew a lot of peppers this year. Had some ghost peppers, habaneras, hot chilies. And give me some suggestions to do with that, Christo.
Well,
oh, this is Ruby,
what you
by
do
the
with
way.
Your peppers, huh? You can make them into salsas and freeze them if you want to save them for the winter.
Salsas.
Or roast up all the peppers and freeze them that way. What is it you like to make?
That sounds good. I would like a nice sauce.
Well, a nice sauce. Well, you've got probably a big mix of hot peppers there, so I would first make sure you know what the heat is going to be on all of those, because you don't want to make some sauce that's going to kill you. You said you've got ghost peppers.
Yes, this is Ruby, Christo.
Hey, Ruby. I thought that was you, because as soon as you said ghost peppers...
Yeah,
I remember seeing a picture you posted the other day.
I want to use them. I don't just want to look at them. But, you know, nice idea. I know they're intensely hot.
Well, just, you know what, just roast them up, peel them, de-seed them, and throw them in a blender and make a puree out of them and freeze it just like that. Because you have the ghost peppers there, well, you're going to end up with a very good concentrated sauce that you could then later use, you know, by the teaspoon or so in other sauces. So if, say, you want to make, you know, your spaghetti sauce a little bit more spicy, depending on how hot that original sauce is, you know, you could add that as needed. You could then, you know, pick up some other chilies that you see in your market, dried chilies. I'm sure, you know, you live in a big metropolitan area, sort of, or have access to one. So you can get some dried New Mexico chilies or the guajillo peppers or any of those other dried Mexican chilies and reconstitute those and make a sauce and then be able to kick it up with the heat that you've got coming from yours. You grew these in your garden this year, right?
Yeah, sure did.
Well, that's so cool. They were so bright red. They look so lovely.
Yes.
How hot were those ghost peppers? They must have been really hot.
Extremely.
Extremely
hot.
So
I know I have to use them with caution.
That's my suggestion, then, is roast those, de-seed them, peel them, wear gloves when you're touching them, because otherwise you won't be able to touch your eyes for weeks, and make a concentrated sauce and freeze that. You could freeze it in tinier little packets. You could freeze it in an ice tray, and then after they're cubes, dump those cubes into a bag so that you know you've got each one as a concentrated little cube there, and that would be the thing to do.
All right. Well, I'm going to try it. Appreciate
Thanks so much for calling in.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, let's get to our guest. We've got a guy out there that is incredibly popular with the ladies. He's a world traveler. He's just... he's been all over the place lately. We'll let him tell you all the different places he's traveled to, but he's been traveling around. He's an amazing barbecue guy. His culinary skills and his artistic talent with the photography and the camera is getting better each and every time he posts something, which that's what you want to see in people. That's what you want in yourself. So he lives by example. Ladies and gentlemen, viewers, listeners, let me introduce you, a bachelor in his grill, David Olson. Hey, David, are you there?
I am. Good morning, Christo.
Good morning.
That was quite the introduction.
That's something, we got a caller right before you. That's nice.
Very exciting. Well, I'm excited to be here today. Thanks for having me.
No, it's exciting to have you. So let's just go right into the travels. That's something you've been doing a lot lately, and that's something you sort of made a little personal commitment to try to do more of. It's kind of part of your culinary journey, right?
Yeah, well, behind the scenes, long time no see. I think, what was it, about 48 hours ago, we were sitting downtown Manhattan together having a bite to eat?
It was probably about 48 to 72 hours ago. We were right there at the corner of the Flatiron Building and right across the street from Madison Square Park, and that was one of those long, rainy days. It just rained all day long that day.
Oh man, it was. Yes, I had too much. I had too much fun though. It was fantastic. I love New York City. But I'm coming live and in person here from Grand Rapids, Michigan, the Gold Coast. So, but travel has been something that has played a large influence on my culinary and photography work, and. Travel has become a very significant portion of my life. So there's no place I love to be more than home. But getting out and getting into the world and exploring and having adventure is surely something that makes my blood boil.
Well, the two most recent trips that I can think of is you just went to Ireland recently, and you just went to Norway recently.
Yeah. So those were just fantastic trips. So I've been from Tasmania and Australia to Kauai and Europe. I'm heading down to South America this winter. But it is, I'll tell you, those two places, Scandinavia, my heritage is Norwegian, and had a chance to go back to this small farmside community northeast of Oslo on the Swedish and Norwegian border, where my grandfather's built the church 1,000 years ago and raised their families. And it was really neat to get back and see that. We had a chance to get to Sweden. We ate at the best restaurants in the world in Copenhagen, and it was absolutely incredible. And Ireland.
Let me ask you a little oddball
amazing
question that just popped in my head. I have a friend who lives in Norway, and she posts various landscape pictures and things that she sees all around. Did you happen to see any of those large Viking burial mounds, those mounds that people talk about there?
It's absolutely incredible. The landscape and the scenery of Western Norway is like no other place in the entire world. The way that the cliffs and the mountains dive down into the oceans, the green space, the natural fauna, flora is amazing. And there's surely an incredible amount of heritage there with the Vikings. And there's some absolutely phenomenal reserved pieces of Viking history with the ships and et cetera.
So did that influence you culinarily at all? Did you end up just loving lutefisk or whatever? I think that's that real smelly fish that they like to eat there.
I think I had enough smoked fish in my trip there to last me for a while. But I'll tell you what's really inspiring, though, about Scandinavia is their resources are relatively limited to the Norwegian and, Swedish islands. There's 50,000 islands on the east coast of Sweden, and the resources are relatively limited comparably to what we have here, but it's really inspiring to see how they use and combine these limited resources and create these amazing dishes in these restaurants that you hear about. Noma, the number one rated restaurant in the entire world, and Rene Redzepi, their chef, and what he's doing in Copenhagen. We ate at the very top of a mountain in Bergen at the most incredible, like, piano restaurant. To even describe the scene was amazing. And then in Copenhagen at Krebsgaden, it was in a Fear Craig in Sweden. It was pretty incredible to see what they're able to put together with, again, like I said, the resources they have.
Now, I know I have a friend in Sweden also. Now, Sweden's kind of a big melting pot. You've got people,
it is,
oddly enough, a huge varietal of races of people have decided to make Sweden their home. I don't know, is it the same way that you notice in Norway?
Yeah, it's like the gateway to the world. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know what's really interesting about that portion of the world is they're becoming industrialized so late in the 20th century and now in, the 21st century that – this idea of this melting pot and the different cultures and the influences coming together, the creations that are sitting there on a plate and all about you and the architecture and in the landscape is just, it's phenomenal. It's glorious.
Right. So we've got this very popular television personality and chef, Marcus Samuelson, who is Somalian, who ended up growing up in Sweden, who now calls Sweden his home. So there's an example right there. And it is a melting pot. Then that's Sweden. That's not Norway. But so
right, well,
then here you are in Ireland, having drinking beers, eating sausages.
I think actually the majority of my
in the morning.
The majority of my diet, I think, consisted of Guinness beer for at least four meals a day, and then mutton, which afterwards I've discovered what mutton is, and I wouldn't recommend maybe eating mutton afterwards, but it was incredibly tasty. And then other sorts of stewed meats and in assorted potato-type plates. It was by the time, again, I left Ireland, I was ready to go back and get a bit of maybe a cheeseburger, some barbecue ribs, and some hot dogs, dips, and chips back in the old USA.
Well, let's just let the listeners know out there that there's nothing wrong with mutton, and the reason that people would eat mutton versus, say, lamb, for example, because all mutton is just a much older sheep, is lamb is has a more delicate flavor, but it's smaller.
Yep.
So mutton is much bigger, thus you can feed more people.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a much stronger flavor, but the reason that, that some of those places would wait is they would is the animal is now past breeding age. It's no longer producing milk. It's no longer producing offspring. So that's the next logical step. And sorry for vegans and vegetarians and animal rights people out there, but this just kind of how things work a little bit. If you know, if you're going to enjoy eating things, there's to pay, I guess you'd have to say.
Well, and the thing that I really, you know, from being over there, whether it be in Scotland or it be in Ireland, there were a few dishes that were very popular. Lamb was one of those dishes. Sheep, haggis, I found on my breakfast platter often, and venison was the red deer is one of the largest variety of deer in the world and the most popular deer in Ireland, and it's used in stews, it's used in an assorted different types of gamey type of dishes, and it's phenomenal. It's great.
That sounds so fantastic. So how did this influence you when you got back? Were you desiring to create things in a Norwegian fashion? Were you thinking of things, you know, you just couldn't make enough shepherd's pie? Did it have any effect like that on your creativity when you got back?
Yeah, you know, I think that one of the things when you travel, I think the thing that I was most inspired by when I was in Scandinavia is the means of which they use their resources. And I think that's something that's really kind of influenced, you know, my cooking. And I think if I were to describe my style to a degree, I think it'd be, you know, a Midwest blue collar with maybe a little bit of Gold Coast flair. So the Gold Coast of Michigan is maybe among the more beautiful places in the entire world. But just simplistic and preparation and execution, I think, is, you know, what I gathered from my time there in Norway. Local fresh ingredients, rustic. I know you're someone that believes strongly about cooking in color. I love cooking in color, but conceptually sophisticated. And I think that's the combination, I think, of where some of those influences has really came from.
And you do have a blog, your webpage. It's a bachelorandhisgrill.com.
Yeah.
And what it is it should be a resource for guys out there. I know you probably have an enormous amount of female readership, which that's not an unusual thing. Not just because you're a bachelor and his grill and you're a strapping, handsome young guy and all that. But
I got to come on your radio program more often. This is great.
But people, well, that check you sent yesterday really had a lot to do with it.
Yeah, right. And the beers this weekend.
But no, what people don't really quite fully understand is that the blogosphere is a female-dominated world for the most part. There's a lot of men that probably have blogs and stuff like that, but it's hugely dominated by women. So the fact that there's that people will say, oh, you know, all your readers are women or whatnot, is because the people that are reading blogs are mostly women. But see, the point I'm going to make is that you probably have an enormous amount of male readership that probably goes unnoticed because they're not commenting or whatever, but they're there trying to pick up tips. You know, they want to
I would say that's the case, you know, and I think a lot of the messaging that I think that I get through, whether it be social media, with whether it be a Facebook or it be through the blog, the comments left are traditionally, you know, women. And I think that, to your point, there is a very significant portion of the viewership that's women for food blogs. A lot of the messaging that I get is asking for tips, recommendations for date nights, for a meal for a weeknight. And I think that there's something about, kind of like I said, that blue-collar, Midwestern, Gold Coast type of flair that I think hits home for people. Like I said, simplistic, but, you know, conceptually sophisticated when it's put on a platter. And I think everyone likes to see a colorful, attractive platter when it's set down for a meal.
Yeah, it's the same as bringing a nice bouquet of flowers. It's a thoughtful thing, and that's what comes across in your photos. People need to really check these out, log on and check it out and look what he's doing. It might look very elaborate to you, you know. If you want to try to attempt some of these things, just look at the details there and go for it. But it's the same as you know, it is date night. So if you're going to bring a lovely bouquet of flowers for your date, you know, you might as well do the same thing with a colorful platter and some, you know, some fresh ingredients and delicious foods, and it's all there. That's the point I'm trying to make, is that wherever you're dating, it doesn't matter, man, woman, hermaphrodite, transvestite, anything that exists out there, everybody wants to be impressed, and everyone's got their standards. You know, some people want to make sure that you've got cuticles pushed back, you know, and that you've got shiny shoes. So, a beautiful
plate. We cook with colorful plates of food, right?
That's right. We try to impress with colorful food, bright, fresh ingredients. You know.
Absolutely. And I think that I think that the food photography has been something that's evolved kind of significantly, I know, since I started the blog. And I think as passionate I am about the cooking and the travel, I was born an art major in college. Before I got into the world of business as my, you know, my day job. But that's something that's taken a lot of time to really kind of develop and study and talk and network. And it's an art craft as much as developing a plate and a specific taste and contrast and complement of flavors. It's the same way that a picture lines up. But there's some very, very simple tips that, if folks are interested, are very easy to employ when you're taking food photography that I'd be happy to share.
Well, maybe you could give us a couple of those tips right now, if there's a way to explain them.
Yeah.
So the listeners can understand.
Well, I think that, as you know, I think number one, be a cook. Get out, try, experiment, understand what it is that you like. And I think that if you're cooking what you like, it's better to display that on a plate when you're feeling passionate about that work. Whenever you're taking food photography, use natural light. For Pete's sake, turn off the flash. One of the best recommendations I was ever provided was by a gentleman by the name of Matt Armendariz. And Matt is one of the best food photographers in the entire world, and he says natural light. Take your photographs 1 hour after sunrise or 1 hour before sunset. The harsh light that's created by the flash ruins almost all of the, you know, flare and the shadows and the contrast and the color. It removes it. So you remove that depth that's in those photographs. So,
and not, I'm going to interrupt you right for a second there. Not to mention that the flash is a white light, which is a good thing on many occasions. But that white flash of a tungsten flash can wash out the colors.
Oh, absolutely.
So if you're, you know, because there are ways to use the flash where you're bouncing it, but then it's indirect light. But what people don't quite get. They, you know, they're hitting it with that flash, and then it looks so garish. But anyway, carry on.
So maybe is this like our educational session for folks like on Facebook who I see like all of their photographs like posted up on timeline all day long, and it looks like mush most of the time?
You know, I've talked to some of these people, and they can't handle criticism. So
okay.
They're going to have to come around it on their own.
All right.
they've asked me for tips. I've given them tips, and then they end up hating me because I told them how bad their photos look. But they did ask.
Oh, man, you're a big old lovable teddy bear. What are you talking about?
So I can see a little bit of the influence from Matt Armendariz because, you know, and we all get influenced from each other, but, you know, you had a style of photography going on for a little while there. Now you have an enormously different style. You're not quite so close. That's another thing that people can't quite get the handle on. You don't need to zoom right in there. You know, pull back. Let us see what you're eating. You know, if you're right there on top of the plate of spaghetti and all we see is like six noodles and a bunch of sauce, it's not that appealing.
Oh my goodness, that's food photography on social media, particularly Pinterest. Gets under my skin a bit. I don't want to see the grain and the atoms and the nucleus of your food. It'd be great to pull the photo back, tell a story with what you're taking in terms of your picture. Allow us
tell
to tell
a
what's
story.
Place.
That's
so
an
I think
important
that kind of
thing
out.
For people to
photograph
take away
class.
Right there. Tell a story with your food.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and you do tell stories each and everything that you post. You know, you do these amazing little cast iron skillet dishes from shepherd's pies to the pies, you know, the other little galettes, the different pies that you're making. I mean, just the nostalgia and the simplicity and the story that a cast iron skillet can do to people. I think there's probably not a person out there that doesn't look at a cast iron skillet and it conjures up some nostalgia for them.
Yeah, it's rustic. It's homey. It's it feels like something maybe mom or grandma would have made. You know, there's something good about that.
Well, I think I've got a new hashtag for the day, and it's going to be something. Let's see if we can come up with that. Use food to tell a story. Make your thing tell a story. What's going to be that hashtag that we'll use for today for everyone?
I kind of like that. I kind of like the cooking card.
Have your food tell a story. Have your food tell a story. It's such an important thing for people to think about because that's when people are talking about the traditions and the heritage and all that behind their food, those are the stories.
Right. Right. Oh, absolutely. And that's, I think, when you talk about your readership that's going out to a blog, it's great to have a recipe. But I think what we're looking for is a story. Tell the background. You have a background story and how you kind of came into your cooking, and I have a background of how I came into, you know, doing this blog. So tell a story through that cooking. Allow it to show through in your photographs and have a ton of fun in the process.
And you're adding to your story with all your travels. So
your
book, your
idea.
Fabric is getting a bigger weave every time you go somewhere.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Traveling the world, having fun,
well,
and one thing at a time.
You know, look at that. 30 minutes goes by like a minute. Didn't it just go so fast? Because here's RoboDrum coming in. We've got David Olson, everybody out there, a bachelorandhisgrill.com. Log on. Check it out. You're going to see what we're talking about with these photos. You're going to see where he means it when he's telling a story. And for all you bachelors out there, for all you girls that are trying to snag a bachelor, and all you guys that are trying to snag a bachelor, and all you girls that are trying whatever the combination of that matrix is, check out Bachelor and His Grill, and you will get some great ideas. Once again, the end of another week, the end of another show. Thanks for tuning in. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Yeah, ain't no way I can make everybody happy now. just when you thought radio was safe. A new kind of radio is on its way. Food, music, and friends. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Coming in 2014.